Hello, and welcome to the Let's Talk Attachments podcast. My name is Jessica Da Silva, and I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist and an attachment coach, helping adults end their unhealthy dating patterns and create stronger, secure relationships. Attachment theory gives us insight into how we currently experience love through understanding our earlier attachment dynamics. I created this podcast as a safe space to share stories and insights on different aspects of attachment so that you can better understand how this manifests in your own life. My only request is that you listen with an open heart and an open mind. So without further ado, let's get into it. Hello, everybody. So today on the podcast, we have a very special guest. Chris Ratcliffe is a personal development writer and anxious attachment style coach whose ability to paint with words has touched the lives of millions of people around the world. Ratcliffe shares stories that cut straight to the heart, detailing his own heartfelt and harrowing experiences to help others lead happier, healthier, more fulfilling lives. In his books and blogs, keynotes, and coaching sessions, Ratcliffe blends principles of psychology, philosophy, physics, and spirituality with his signature storytelling aim to make you feel and heal. His new book, It's Good to See Me Again, How to Find Your Way When You Feel Lost, a guidebook on the journey to emotional healing, is available now on Amazon. You can read his blog and explore working with him at www.crackliff.com and check him out on TikTok and Instagram at Crackliff, all of which I will add to the show notes. So on this episode, Chris answered a lot of juicy questions regarding what the anxious attachment style experience is, their strengths and challenges, his changed relationship to the avoidant attachment style, and tips on how to build more security within yourself and your relationships. So without further ado, here we go. Welcome, Chris, to Let's Talk Attachments. I'm happy that you're here because, like I told you before, I have been following you for a while. I always find my people on TikTok and then I transition and follow them on Instagram. And it's just like, I'm very grateful for social media in that way. But I love that you specifically focus on anxious attachments, and your content is just so potent and just so direct and so straightforward. And I always, always appreciate that approach. So thanks for being here.
Thank you so much, Jessica. It means the world to me. I'm so excited to dive in today.
Awesome. And just letting everybody know, my internet is a little iffy today. So hopefully this is just going to run smoothly. Crossing my fingers here. We're also in Mercury retrograde right now. So who knows?
Lots of retrogrades.
Lots of retrograding. Okay. So Chris, tell me, what led you into this attachment work? I'm so curious.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, the reason I'm a coach for people with an anxious attachment style is because for most of my life, I struggled with it myself. So, you know, I think when you talk about my content being direct and like to the point, it's because I'm oftentimes speaking from my own experience. So I had a video on TikTok that I did about a fear of abandonment and it becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy, and it got about 100,000 likes. And people were like, I feel like you're talking about my life story. And it's because I was talking about my own. And so I focus on anxious attachment because I thought I was crazy. For many years, I genuinely thought there was something wrong with me, that I was needy and clingy, all of the things that go through the mind of someone with anxious attachment. I thought, never going to meet the right person. I should have seen this coming. I always date the same emotionally unavailable partner. And it was actually a situationship with an avoidant, shocker, that led to me reaching out to a therapist and then ultimately finding out my attachment style. And when I found that out, it was what I describe as sort of like a light bulb or watershed or aha moment. And it just changed everything for me. I made a vow, a pact with myself that I wouldn't stop talking about attachment theory for as long as I live, because I wanted other people to know this is a known pattern of behaviors that stem from very specific traumatic events or instability, invalidation, and to know that you can address this, you can grow more secure. So that's how I got into being a coach. It's kind of a long and winding road and story. My former career was in social media marketing, and I worked in the magazine industry, in particular in New York, for many years. And it was in 2017, so 5 years ago, that I got laid off in a round of restructuring when I was working at People Magazine and Entertainment Weekly, running their social media departments. And it was during that time that I started asking some pretty big questions of myself. You know, what is my purpose? Why am I here? How can I have an impact? And I realized that I wanted to write more than, you know, an Instagram caption or a Facebook teaser or what have you. I wanted to write a book. So I started writing my first book, It's Good to See Me Again, which came out in 2020. It's all about my own personal emotional healing journey and processing some of my own traumas from my life, abandonment wounds, trigger warning for those who have experienced sexual abuse, my own sexual abuse at the hands of my sister, and just sort of outlining how I found forgiveness, what that meant for me, and specifically the steps that I took to heal from those experiences, losing my mom when I was 18, dating a lot of unavailable partners, having a lot of casual sex, just really digging a hole for myself and feeling very depleted and empty, and then how I sort of began to climb out of it. It's not about attachment styles in particular, but it does detail a lot of the events that led to the development of my anxious attachment style. Coaching came later. It wasn't until I really gave myself permission to say, I do have a voice here, and I can be a leader or an authority in this space because I felt that deep sense of suffering and pain that comes with each failed relationship that you experience when you have an anxious attachment style. You just dig down deeper into that shame. I'm not good enough. It's never going to happen for me. And, you know, once I finally gave myself permission and worked through some of the limiting beliefs of my own and fears of my own, I ended up going viral on TikTok, landing a lot of clients really quickly, and business has been really great ever since. And even more important than that, I've been able to have an impact on the lives of hundreds of people on five continents all over the world. And it's changed my life. It's changed the trajectory of my own healing journey. I would certainly describe myself as way more secure now than I've ever been. Maybe about 75% secure, 25% anxious, depending on the day, depending on the person and the relationship. But yeah, that's how I sort of arrived at this place. It was a long and winding road. It's one that started before the layoff, which happened 5 years ago, but has sort of started really culminating into big life changes in those 5 years.
And I love that you mention, there's so much empowerment. When I talk to, especially, people working in the profession of helping people with their attachment styles, healing from these traumas and things like that, there's so much empowerment that comes from owning and taking responsibility for and looking at, right? Like looking at these different aspects of yourself. And so many of us are afraid to do that, but actually, it's the best thing you can do for yourself. So what would you say, to someone who has an anxious attachment style who is honestly like has a lot of shame around, maybe being too needy, quote unquote, or being too codependent or being too emotional. Like, what would you say to them?
First, I would say to them, you are beautiful and wonderful as you are. There is nothing wrong with you. You are not broken. You do not require fixing. You're not some sort of car on the side of the road with a flat tire. You're a human being with feelings, and you know, you're meant to experience the full breadth of the emotional spectrum, whether those are challenging emotions like shame and despair and guilt and betrayal, even, or if it's optimism, joy, appreciation, excitement, you know, you've got to allow yourself to feel it all. Many of the clients I work with have huge hearts. They're so sensitive and they feel very deeply, and they look at it as a curse. It is not a curse to have a big heart. In fact, what I tell a lot of my clients is that's actually a benefit, because that means that your heart has the ability to expand around some of these difficult emotions in a way that others that maybe don't feel so sensitively might struggle with. And a lot of people skate through life numbing their feelings, using substances, other people, sex to try to not feel things. And it's not that we should pity those people. I look at folks, who are using those kinds of coping mechanisms, and I feel for them. I want to help them. I wish them healing. It's that ultimately we have to take responsibility for how we show up. And I would say the only person who will call you needy, who is not you, is someone who doesn't understand their own emotional needs.
Right.
We all have them, and it's important to know there's no such thing as good or bad needs. There might be folks in your life that are more understanding, more respectful of your needs. They might have better relational capacities to meet those needs. That doesn't mean that your needs in and of themselves are bad or good or make you needy. Wanting reassurance and communication, I mean, hello, that's what makes relationships work and thrive. You got to have uncomfortable conversations and open up about how you feel. Some people can't hold space for that. And that's okay. Those might not be your people or people that you want to be as close with as you crave.
Yes. And that's what I truly believe too. And I always reference this quote from John Bowlby, we're only as needy as our unmet needs, because it's so true. And if you're with
Yes.
somebody, often an avoidant, who isn't willing or capable of meeting your needs the way that you desire, then often we can take that personally and make that mean something about us. So if you are not aware that you are doing these patterns or going into these patterns of self-defeating thoughts, it could be really detrimental for one. So tell me.
Absolutely. And people who are anxious beat themselves up all the time about it. And so the last thing I'll say on that question is be soft with yourself. Please be kind with yourself. The world is at times hard enough to operate within, with all of the things happening at a societal and cultural level, all of the massive shifts happening over the course of generations from a technological and, again, cultural standpoint. Be soft with yourself, because we're all just trying to do the best that we can. You don't need more pressure. You don't need more criticism or judgment. You need more softness, more stillness, more compassion with yourself.
I love that. So tell me, how do you navigate your insecurities? Because again, I always like to remind people too that nobody is perfect, even if you're doing the work. Like, there's no, 100% secure attachment that we reach. So I'm sure that insecurities still arise because you're human, but how do you navigate those insecurities now?
Well, first of all, so much differently than I used to, recognizing protest behavior or indirect, passive aggressive, excessive ways to try to regain connection with a partner, usually romantically, but of course, any, one that you might have a relationship with, whether it's platonic or romantic, et cetera. I used to rely on all of those, lashing out, withdrawing, keeping score, showing up at places where I thought they might be, or trying to plan a trip. If I knew that they were going to be somewhere, I mean, yeah, I legitimately thought about or engaged in a lot of those behaviors. Nowadays, though, I tend to be just direct. I think it's just so important to be direct. First and foremost, with yourself, you have to have a good self-care regimen, a good practice, whether it's a daily one or a weekly one. For my clients, I have them do a daily self-care practice that includes a mix of top down or mind to body and bottom up or body to mind nervous system regulation techniques, things like meditation, cold exposure, hydration. Obviously, there's a ton of others, but those are just some examples. So, really lean on your emotional regulation strategies And that's what I do for myself. All the tools I give my clients, I use myself. All the exercises that I pass along to them are ones that I've engaged in at one point or another. Inner child visualization stuff, emotional guidance scale, which is sort of a more metaphysical, spiritual approach to moving yourself up the emotional spiral instead of always just down. Those are just some examples, but I do like being direct with people. So, for instance, if I'm dating someone and I feel like maybe they've been a little distant, I address it directly and I ask them in a very compassionate, open-ended way, like, hey, I've noticed that the cadence of communication has dropped off a little bit. What's been going on your end? And just address it directly. Or if I'm feeling anxious, I'll say, I'm feeling anxious. This is what I need right now. Are you able to grab coffee tomorrow? Are you able to hang out tonight? Or can you please let me know when I can expect to see you next? That's a huge one for people with an anxious attachment style, knowing, making plans, knowing when you're going to see someone. That's super important. So I know these things about myself and I honor them. I don't shame myself about them and I ask for them directly, clearly, and compassionately.
Directly, clearly, and compassionately. I love that. And so how do you deal with possible rejection? How do you deal with someone not wanting to, meet your needs?
Wonderful question. And this comes up a lot in my work with my coaching clients. You don't speak up about your needs because of the outcome. You speak up about them because you are honoring and owning who you are and the fact that your needs are valid. So it's not the needs themselves that can be unhealthy, it's how you go about meeting them. So as long as you're communicating from a place of inclusion, letting someone know, like, hey, this is hard for me. Like when I see blank, or when I notice blank, when I don't hear from someone, it can be really triggering for me. I'd love to find a way for the two of us to talk about our communication preferences and find ways of communicating that work for each of us.
I love that. I love that. And so I'm curious with like your dating experience. So how has dating, just tell me about your dating experience with having this awareness, with having more of this secure approach. How has that been going for you?
It always depends. it always depends on the person that you're dealing with. I just try to be consistent with myself and talk about deal breakers up front. People with an anxious attachment style grasp on and attach really quickly. So I encourage my clients to make sure that they're talking about what doesn't work for them, deal breakers, and the most important stuff up front. That's not going to work as a sort of all-in-one or overarching relationship strategy for every attachment style. It will work for anxious folks because it'll help them rule out folks that might not be able to hold space for that more easily and to see that earlier on before the feelings have developed. So I allow myself to do that as well. I talk about that, the communication is super important to me, that I like to know when I'm going to see someone next. I let them know what my intentions are, that I'm looking for a long-term relationship with the potential to maybe lead to marriage or ultimately a long-term partnership, that monogamy tends to be something that is more important to me. I talk about the fact that I'm spiritual. I always come from just my own perspective, right? Because I always want to show up as myself, who I am, and just own that and see how the other person responds to that. Do they vibe with that? Does it seem like they can hold space for that again? Are they able to understand that? Do they have the depth that I might require that can help me to feel safe? Because I can communicate all day long with someone and tell them what I need and my preferences and what makes me feel loved and secure in a partnership. And they might not have the relational capabilities to meet me there. And that is perfectly okay. But I'd much rather know that on the second or third date than the second or third month, because that's going to save me a lot of time. And so, yeah, my approach just tends to be a lot more direct. Address it directly. Don't rule people out right off the bat necessarily, but pay attention to any anxious feelings that you might feel when someone seems to pull away or when they become inconsistent. It's sort of like, the bat signal going off for yourself. You got to pay attention to your feelings. Your body is incredibly wise. So learning to trust those, honor those, speak up about it. The more willing you are to have uncomfortable conversations, in my experience and in my work with my coaching clients, the healthier and safer and more secure your relationships will become. So I talk about hard stuff early on. I make it known what I want, who I am, what I need, and I own that. And sometimes that's intimidating for folks and they don't like it. And that's okay because that means they're not necessarily who I'm looking for. But getting to a no or getting to a, I don't think this person is necessarily aligned with me more quickly is, I think, a good thing, especially for anxious attachers who can develop feelings very, very quickly.
Yes. Oh my gosh, that was me. So I have the fearful avoidant, but definitely leaning more towards, well, you know what? It's complex. It depends on the situation, the time of life, right? Like what's going on. But I found that I would fall very hard, very quickly. So when I started doing this work and I started dating my current partner, I was like, Jess, I'm just going to be totally direct with this person. I told him I was married. I mean, not currently, but I was married and divorced at an early age. I was just so transparent because I was tired of kind of sugarcoating to then this person realizing, oh, she actually has needs, right? And then that not working. But anyways, I found the direct approach to be super beneficial, obviously, in the long run, because you're being authentic and you're finding who is truly compatible with you or not. So I love that.
Amen. Yes. And I recently dated someone who knew that he had an avoidant attachment style. And it didn't ultimately work out because we weren't necessarily aligned with what we were looking for long term. But the time that we shared together was wonderful and very vulnerable. And we were able to hold space for one another and make each other feel safer than we had experienced in quite a long time. So I also want people to know that as human beings, we're complex emotional creatures, and attachment theory and attachment styles are one way of understanding who you are and who that person is. But as with any label, it is limiting. Okay, so don't rule someone out just because they're avoidant or fearful avoidant or anxious. A lot of the advice out there for attachment is date someone secure. And while that's coming from a place of wonderful intent and good intent, that's not always achievable. And that doesn't help us to learn how to build the security that we need to actively participate in building by having open, vulnerable conversations, by saying, hey, I noticed this and I had a reaction to that. You didn't do anything wrong. I just want you to know that when I see this or when I hear this or when I notice that you do this, it makes me feel this and it makes me feel unsafe. So, would you mind being a little more cognizant of that and just know that this is a thing for me? We got to train other people how to love us. We don't come with an instruction manual. And the more open that you can be, the more that you're able to listen, li actively, truly listen, not to respond, not planning what you're going to say when they're talking, but really listening to what the person is saying, asking clarifying questions. Speaking from your own emotional experience when it is your turn, instead of you statements, I statements, the more people can learn to do that, the healthier their relationships become. And in my dating experience, it has worked wonders. I say no more quickly to people that aren't aligned with me. I know what I want and I own that. And it is intimidating sometimes, but that's who I am. My life can be intimidating as a coach and a TikToker and author and all these things, people are like, who the hell is this person?
Wow. So much truth there. And what would you say, actually, if you have any, have you picked up on any types of behaviors or anything that you can kind of, tell on a first date or first couple of dates if someone is a little bit more avoidant or a little bit more anxious? Like, is there anything that you can pick up on in terms of behaviors or body language or anything of that sort?
Anxious attachers are generally going to be way more leaned in. They're excited about the possibility of connection. They tend to limit distraction, so they're not going to look at their phones a whole lot usually, although some anxiety can lead to doing that, so it's not a hard and fast rule. Many folks who are avoidant tend to not ask as many questions. They've usually been in the role of being pursued, so the anxious person will ask the questions, they'll answer them. Really look at and listen to what it is that they're saying. Also, talk about relational history, talk about childhood upbringing, siblings, talk about preferences again sooner rather than later, and really look at how they respond. Look at their body language, look at the words that they're using. Really listen to that. Does that response come across as maybe more surface level? If you ask a follow-up question, do they gloss over it? That might come off as more avoidant. But that said, it's really ultimately about feeling into your experience when you're dating. So you want to make sure, and I encourage my clients who are single, and I do this myself, to keep a dating diary or a dating journal where they can really get out their feelings and what happened on the date and what they noticed so that they can look at behaviors more clearly and logically than sort of glossing over them or any red flags because they're excited about the possibility of the connection. So, again, the labels are limiting. Attachment is a spectrum. Just because you're noticing a couple of things that might be avoidant about someone, if you're anxious, don't rule them out. Folks who are avoidant have experienced a lot of deep and painful and unstable relationships themselves. It does not make them bad people. The more that you can just see them and listen to them and be a safe place for them to open up, it's transformational. It is. I've had folks cry to me that said they've literally never cried to a romantic partner or in therapy or with family. And they're in their 30s and they're crying to me. And I'm like, I pat myself on the back, of course, because that's a sort of kudos to me to be able to hold that space for them, to really listen and allow them to feel seen and not judged. We have to look at relationships as a chance to get to know other people. So often we approach it from this place of it being a transaction or a competition. That's not how human beings thrive. That's not how you achieve love or sex self-actualization. That's how you achieve a guilt-based, conditional kind of relationship. And a lot of adult relationships are conditional. But that said, the more that you can make yourself feel known, the more that they can help you feel seen, and vice versa, the healthier and more stable and more secure not only you will become, but the relationship becomes. So you kind of transcend the labels.
I have, yep. And I love that. I love looking at attachment styles as, or just as humans, right? The approach that I take with this work is just humanizing all of these labels, right? Humanizing all of these experiences because we are so multidimensional. And even though we can be anxious one day, we can be avoidant the next, right? There's moments where we feel secure. There's moments where we have this fear. So it's just, yes, just accept the fact that you are human and there's so many layers of yourself are very, very complex in that way. So I like that you kind of take this humanistic approach to coaching.
Thank you. Thank
Yeah.
you.
Yeah. So what would you tell your clients that, or someone that comes up to you and, says, I think I can't change. I'm scared I can't change. I've been operating for this way for so long. Because often I find that, especially people that have more of the anxious attachment style, if they don't change immediately, it's like they're just doomed, right? They just want those immediate results. And that's not how it works. This is a lifestyle. It's really a lifestyle. So what do you tell them?
Well, first of all, I would just validate the fact that after one failed relationship after another, or a series or a history of instability or unstable relationships, it's natural that you're going to doubt, worry, feel anxious, not know if you can ever change. Because once we experience that pain and suffering again and again and again, of course, it chips away at our sense of self-worth and self-trust. And we have to build that back. And that's part of the work, obviously, that I do, and I'm sure you do with your clients. You got to build it back. But human beings are capable of immense change. Immense change. Look at my description at the top of the episode about my former career and now my current career. Those are two very different things. I didn't create a book out of nowhere. It took me 3 years to write it and rewrite it and rewrite it again and restructure it. And it was a winding road. Healing is not linear. You're going to have bad days. That's okay. But if you commit to doing the work that you need to do, and you know, when people say the work, I think it's important to be very clear about what that means. The work to reflect on your patterns, the origins of where your style of attaching or relating to others comes from. What are the relationships that impacted you to create this style of relating to others? Or what were the events? Maybe you lost a sibling or a parent or a loved one. Maybe you have someone who cheated on you in the past and that stayed with you. Maybe it's a combination of all of the above. Maybe you just haven't had someone that really, truly wanted to know you for who you are. That does not mean that there is anything wrong with you. You are always capable of learning the skills relationally that were not modeled for you growing up and that you didn't pick up in previous relationships that were likely unstable and unhealthy and insecure. If it's not modeled for you and you don't have it shown to you in the context of a relationship, where the hell are you supposed to learn it? You've got to actively seek that out as an adult and reparent yourself. So that might look like journaling, working with a therapist and or a coach. Many of my clients do both because they're different healing modalities. Also, really looking at how you've shown up in your relationships and where you stand to improve. I have my clients do a SWOT analysis or strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats. How they need to, we need to holistically look at ourselves and what our blind spots are so that we can recognize where we need to focus our attention and intention so that we can learn the skills we need to learn, so that we can have the uncomfortable conversations that we've heretofore avoided, so that we can give ourselves the opportunity to open up and allow other people to honor our boundaries, hear our needs, to hold space for that. If we never open up and do that, we never get the security we're seeking. So, in order to change, you might need someone to help you hold yourself accountable. That's what a coach or a therapist can do. You are likely going to need a safe environment in which you can open up and express things and not be judged or criticized or invalidated or offered unsolicited advice within. Obviously, coaching and therapy are great for that too. You may be able to find friends that do that. That's kind of rare. Most of the time, your friends and family are there to protect you, as are your fear and anxiety. So they will likely exacerbate your anxiety. They're well-intentioned, but they can't always hold space for you and just allow you to be. They want to take the pain away. They want to protect you and prevent you from getting hurt. So you really got to look for safe connections and nurture those. Oftentimes, people do start within an environment that's safe with a mental health professional. And, you know, I think in addition, it's so important again to make sure that you're taking care of yourself. You need to get a good night's rest. You need to eat well. You need to stay hydrated. Make sure the basics are in place. You've got to have those. If not, of course, relationally, you're going to feel off and your anxiety is going to spike. Your body is not existing in a silo. Your nervous system, which is, you know, activated when you're triggered and you feel wounded or hurt. That doesn't exist separately from your respiratory system, your cardiovascular system, the digestion system or digestive system. You have to know that you have to take care of all those parts because they feed into one another. The gut is called the second mind or brain for a reason. It has the second most to the brain of neural pathways in the body. So if you're not If you don't have good gut health, you're not going to have good mental health. And studies are just now showing this connection that, Eastern and ancient cultures kind of knew existed. But, prebiotics, probiotics, make sure you're eating healthy fats. Your brain is mostly comprised of fat. So, you really got to look at these things, take better care of yourself, find an approach that works for you, find out where your gaps are, identify those and address them.
Yes, I love it. Something that's really been helpful for me too, because like you said, we didn't have these role models growing up. I had no idea what a healthy, secure type of person or relationship looked like. So in the beginning, when I started doing this work, I created a support system around myself that involved books and podcasts because I didn't have the people yet, or at least I couldn't recognize those people yet. So I would familiarize myself with these books and these podcasts and just as much bibliotherapy or whatever I could find out there. And there's so much information out there now, especially on attachment theory. And then from there, my support system grew. I started to attract friends that were more secure. I started to attract, partners or potential people that, were operating from a way that I was beginning to live by. So if you don't have that support system yet, just, find these resources that really promote what you are looking for, what you're looking to attain, what you're looking to embody, and it'll build from there.
I love that so much. Yes, you raise such a great point about the support system and starting where you can. And for many people, because they've lacked those kinds of safe spaces and connections for themselves throughout their lives, you gotta educate yourself, surround yourself with the content or creators that are gonna help you feel seen. Start somewhere. And for each person, it might look a little different. Someone might gravitate to a podcast, another person might gravitate to a book. Another person to a therapist, but just start somewhere and build from there. One of the things I have my clients do, I do this with them without them necessarily knowing it. Obviously, I play the role of a safe and secure connection because I'm never going to invalidate or criticize or judge them. And they see that and it builds over time over the course of the coaching program that I run. But they also identify a secure role model couple in their life, and they stay in touch with them throughout the coaching program. I have them identify and create a sort of agreement, if they don't already have one, with an anxiety accountability buddy. So, someone that likely experiences anxious attachment. Of course, I'm talking about anxious attachers here specifically because that's where I focus in my work, because that's, where my history stems from. So, for anxious attachers, finding somebody else that struggles with the same things, who isn't triggered, who can relate, see you, not invalidate you, and just hold space for that. And also, I have my clients practice boundaries setting, typically in a safer connection, and then working their way up to maybe a bigger boundary with someone that traditionally hasn't been safe for them. So without knowing it, I'm doing this for them anyway. I'm building this support system, the secure role model, me, their anxiety accountability buddy. If they're in a relationship, then their partner, or if they're dating, then their romantic prospects, et cetera. And so you're building that web of support that so many of us la have lacked throughout our lives. And that helps to really build a sense of being seen and understood, and an environment where you can be validated for who you are instead of told that you're crazy or needy or clingy. In the context of those spaces, you can help really unlock significant transformational change for yourself. If you were wounded in unsafe relationships, you will heal through safe relationships. You also need to develop a safe relationship with yourself. So you need to carve out intentional time to be still, to meditate or journal or express gratitude or all the above, whatever that looks like for you. You've got to carve out time and space for yourself. Slow it down. Many people on the anxious side of things from an attachment standpoint are go, 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 go. It's a trauma response. You got to slow yourself down. Just slow it down and start there.
Ooh, yes. And being okay with that silence, being okay with that space, because we're often trying to fill it with something, right? So, and
Yes,
I love the,
often unhealthy things.
yeah, often unhealthy things. Yeah. So being okay, cre learning how to regulate yourself in that space, in that void, in that like in-between space is really, really important. So I love that you said that.
Thank you.
Yeah. And also I wanted to touch, Chris, on, you know, what you said about the avoidance, because, you know, you coming from more of this anxious background and having such a compassionate perspective for avoidance, which they rightfully deserve because they are human. So can you just speak to that a little bit in terms of how you were able to create this relationship, this different perspective? Or, yeah, this different perspective for avoidance.
Oh, I don't think I've ever been asked this question before. I think for me personally, and this doesn't work for everyone, but for me, forgiveness has been such a critical part of my own healing. Forgiving my mom, who passed away from alcoholism when I was 18, forgiving my sister for what I already described earlier and her own addiction that consumed her. I've just gotten to a place in my life where I want to be known for my compassion. That's just who I am. I want to try to see other people for their nuances and their complexities and try to meet them where they are, not look at them as someone to be controlled or manipulated or as a threat, but rather as someone who likely has healing work of their own to do and to know that I can play an active role in holding space for that, but knowing it's not my responsibility either.
Yes.
That's where codependency comes in, the subversion of self or sacrifice of self in order to build or maintain relationships with others. That's codependency, you know, and that's hard because we want to help other people, but people have to help themselves. And I learned this because of the struggles with addiction that my mom and my sister had, which ultimately led to their demise, unfortunately. So I learned to see it from a compassionate place. I learned to see it not as darkness, but the absence of light, not as something to be hated, because I knew that hate wasn't going to fill that gap or that void that they were using substances to fill. I knew that it was because they did not love themselves that they were engaging in these behaviors. They had to rely on substances to cope with their reality. And, you know, addiction is a disease and it's incredibly painful, not only for the person experiencing it, but for those around them. And it was going through and witnessing that pain that really trained me to be able to see that someone struggling doesn't mean that we should be unkind to them. That doesn't mean we have to be close to them. We might need to be well boundaried with them. But at the end of the day, you can wish someone well, even if you don't necessarily want to engage with them. And also, one avoidant is not the same as another avoidant. You know, you got to look at someone and see who are they? Do they know this about themselves? How self-aware are they? What kind of work have they done? Are they open to discussing how they feel? If not, ask them what makes them feel safe. They might not even know. In that case, they might not have the sort of rudimentary or foundational understanding that they might need in order to engage with you as the anxious partner. That does not make them a bad person or evil or toxic or narcissistic. It might mean that they are not a good fit for you long term or not a safe relationship for you. And that's okay. But judging them or criticizing them only reinforces the beliefs that the avoidant has about themselves, which is that they cannot open up. They're better off on their own. I tend to refer to this as lone wolf syndrome. You know, I don't need you. I got this. Why open up? Emotions are stupid. Feelings are for people who are weak. You know, that when I hear that from someone, and maybe this is the coach in me coming out, but I stop and I ask, why are you saying that about yourself? Because that sounds kind of unhealthy and self-deprecating. And that's kind of disturbing to me.
Yeah, I always I do the same thing, and sometimes I have to question, wait, Jessica, is this the right place, the right person to confront this about? But that's always my reaction too, to be like, wait a second, why are you talking? Because it really is the that your self-dialogue, it creates your reality. Like it really factors into our belief systems, and that's really how we view everything, is through our belief system. So the more that you speak in that way, you're, like you said, you're just reinforcing what you don't want.
Exactly. Yes. The more that you're able to speak calmly and clearly to someone who is avoidant, the more they'll open up. The less you stop criticizing, stalking, judging, pressuring, acting out in protest behaviors, the more they will open up. I
Yes.
have seen relationships turn around from the brink of breakup from literally a couple of clients that I work with who are anxious, who were in anxious avoidant relationships. They're in couples therapy. They are deciding to stop going because it's not working. Like they're literally about to break up after years of being together. And through working with the anxious person on focusing on themselves, not trying to control or criticize, being more compassionate and direct in their delivery, taking better care of themselves, owning the need for space and independence in a relationship which is healthy, the better the connection becomes, the more they realize, oh, that avoidant person has heard every single thing that I've been saying all along. And the more likely they are to want to meet the anxious person's needs because they have the space and the wherewithal and the safety to do it themselves. They are more than capable. Avoidants, I have found, also have big hearts. They just have closed them off to the people in their lives because they've been shown again and again that when they open up, they just get burned. And you cannot cure fire with more fire. You
Right.
just, it doesn't make sense. You can't do that. You can't criticize and judge and act out and, build, bring more insecurity to what is already clearly insecurity. It doesn't work.
Right. Wow, that is powerful stuff. And you're so right about the avoidance having big hearts. They really do. They're actually very, very sensitive, is what I've found. And the reason why they have such strong barriers is because they are deeply sensitive and they don't want to get hurt and they don't want to feel pain. So they just are much better at kind of protecting themselves in these ways. But yeah, they deeply feel. They really, really do.
They do. And brain scans of people with an anxious attachment style and an avoidant attachment style are nearly identical. What that says is that from a purely objective scientific brain scan standpoint, the same regions of the brain are firing and the same intensity.
Yeah.
It's just that the avoidant has used or learned to use deactivating strategies to ensure that they don't reveal how they feel. But their struggle is internal and their struggle is real. And I have real compassion for that because as someone who's anxious, I felt it. And of course, I wear it on my sleeve. I can't hide it. That's just, how I activate and how I am and
Yeah.
how anxious folks tend to be. But that does not mean that they are not struggling. And, if you really want to make it work with an avoidant partner and you're anxious, you've got to dig deep and try to bring the security that you want to see from your partner to the relationship. Somebody has to bring it. If you don't, you just continue spiraling down in the anxious avoidant quote unquote trap, which is a misnomer because of course, you can make that dynamic work, but you've got to bring the security and not more insecurity to it. It only creates and sows more discord, dysfunction, and insecurity.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And something I found too, like personally doing this work, is the more that I'm compassionate with myself, the more that I'm accepting of myself, I can be more compassionate with others, right? So with my partner, who is, he's secure, but definitely avoidant tendencies. But because I understand my own insecurities, because I understand my own challenges, I can then have compassion for his. So it's just such a be and again, what you mentioned earlier, that self-work, You know, that creating that secure attachment within yourself first is so important in order to kind of offer that to other people as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's that saying that you can only meet someone as deeply as they've met themselves, and it's the same is true for you. You have to know what's going on internally in order to bring somebody in. How else are you going to be able to communicate them with them how you're feeling, what you need, what this experience is like for you? Center yourself in your experience. Stop putting the other person on a pedestal, expecting them to meet all your needs. Look at yourself and the role that you play in this. Because oftentimes we project our insecurities outwards when we are disconnected with ourselves, when we're out of balance, we're not taking good care of ourselves. This tends to exacerbate the insecure side of the attachment spectrum. It's not a recipe for something that's healthy or secure or stable. So you got to look inwards and really look at the role that you play in that process. It's what you do every day and consistently with yourself that adds up to that change over time that we were talking about is possible earlier.
Yeah, beautifully said. So, where can people find you, Chris? Tell us.
Absolutely. So on social media, you can find me at Crackliff or Crack Life with two Fs. Chris Rackliff is my full name. So on Insta or TikTok, Crackliffe. And also Crackliff.com, Crackliffe.com. Anyone who's interested in booking an appointment with me, all of my consultations are free. I have a team that would be more than happy to speak with you and evaluate if you're a good fit for the program. In addition, my book, It's Good to See Me Again, is available on Amazon now. Again, I want to be clear, it does not address attachment styles or attachment theory, but it details my own emotional healing journey, how I found forgiveness, how I learned to be more compassionate, first and foremost with myself. There's a chapter in there called The Validation Detox that might be useful for people. So those are some resources for folks. There's a ton of free content on my website about how to manage anxious attachment, how to have healthier relationships. And I've done hundreds of TikTok videos that have garnered almost 1.6 million likes.
Wow.
So check them out.
Yeah, beautiful. Yes, definitely check out Chris's work. Again, he is, I love the approach. It's direct, it is clear, it is to the point. It speaks to the heart of the matter, and I think that's just what we need that. We need more of that. So, if you're
The heart of
open
the
to
matter,
this,
yes.
yes, the heart of the matter. It's how we transform. It's how we, you know, it's how we find those solutions immediately, right? To make the changes we want to see in our life. So, thank you again for coming on, and I'm excited for everyone to hear this conversation. If you are a self-learner and you're looking for an online program teaching you the insight and tools to develop more security and confidence within yourself and your relationships, visit jessicadesilvacoaching.com to learn about my digital course, My Secure Self. And I will add that to the show notes. Thank you so much for listening, and I will catch you on the next episode.